You might have heard last week when we were speaking with Sarah Donnelly, who's one of the community members at Wilcannia, working to ensure that town gets all the supplies and things it needs. And during that conversation, she mentioned to us that they were receiving assistance from Resilience New South Wales. Now, we know the work they do in times of flood and post-bushfire, but what is Resilience New South Wales doing around the COVID and whereabouts is it? So I thought we'd catch up with the former RFS Commissioner, now Commissioner of Resilience New South Wales, Shane Fitzsimmons, who joins us on the line. Commissioner, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning, Simon. Nice to be talking with you again.
Great to catch up with you. I was pondering what Resilience New South Wales does in these COVID situations. What's your role?
So we are part of the whole of government and non-government organisation response effort to the disaster and to supporting the New South Wales health-focused effort. So under the state's emergency management arrangements, we've got the leadership through the police and Deputy Commissioner Warboys. We partner in very closely, and as a matter of fact, core to our role is resourcing and administration support to the state's emergency operations centre. We're also very closely aligned to the multifaceted efforts to try and coordinate and integrate the range of different services and supports, logistics efforts and whatever else is going on to support operations. And there's also this responsibility, Simon, particularly around welfare relief, what we call the welfare services functional area of the emergency management architecture, is to partner in with key organisations like Communities and Justice, Community Services, Multicultural New South Wales, big and small not-for-profit organisations, community organisations. How do we identify, capture and then service all those relief, those welfare relief arrangements that are needed in local communities? So it's a varied role, but part of a significant and coordinated effort.
But it's got to be pointed out, it's a statewide focus as well. So then you've got the differences of different regions and their needs.
Absolutely. And just to give you some perspective on the sorts of relief that's going on, we've partnered very closely. So we've had these focused local government areas in the Sydney Basin, all the challenges and complexities attached there too. But partnering with Multicultural New South Wales, with health, with not-for-profit organisations, all sorts of language and communication services, targeted programs around relief and support, key partner organisations like AusHarvest and Food Bank New South Wales, delivering food hampers and personal care supplies and materials and other protective equipment, protective supplies like sanitizers and masks and cleaning wipes, and even in a lot of the communities, getting to understand the nuance or the peculiarities or uniquenesses of different communities, making sure we've got food packs that are culturally sensitive and appropriate to mix in. Food Bank, for example, Simon, in the last couple of months, has gone from 3,500 orders a week to over 7,500 orders a week. And we're gearing with Food Bank to go up to 10,000 orders a week. In the month of July, with the reporting period, we were just under 1,600 tons of food supplies. And so far through August, we've now seen that go up to more than 1,800 tons of food supplies. And they are being distributed right across the state, the Sydney Basin, rural and regional New South Wales, a lot of isolation care support programs and packages that go in there as well, partnering very closely with local community organisations and leaders and identities, councils, Aboriginal land councils, elders, religious leaders, community leaders, business leaders, local councillors, and local MP. So it's a very collaborative, joined-up approach, making sure we're getting the right support to the right locations in the right time.
With Commissioner Shane Fitzsimmons from Resilience New South Wales. Commissioner, one of the things that you mentioned there, the nuance of the communities, I guess brings us back to the town of Wilcannia. It does have a very unique position within this, and also a high percentage of the town now returning positive COVID testing. We saw movements of caravans and tents into the area, but a lot of people have said to me that that's a great effort, just a little bit too late. What can we do for Wilcannia?
Oh, there's a lot that's been going on with Wilcannia, and I think you mentioned a lady in your introduction there. Was she the local school teacher principal out in Wilcannia?
Sarah Donnelly is very much the community spokesperson that we're speaking to now, In fact, we'll catch up with her next. Yeah.
Okay, well, Sarah's been speaking with my deputy as well, and they've been working very closely together to understand challenges and even things like food supply, so not just hampers and non-perishable goods and care programs, but things like cool rooms and other things into the area. Yes, we've been working to get appropriate accommodation arrangements identified and suitable to the area. There's been a lot of consultation, not just with people like Sarah, but also local land councils, local elders and other community members. We've got an RFS base camp facility being set up in Wilcannia this week and should be operational this weekend. And that's mainly for the people coming in to help with the operational effort. And then there's been some other temporary accommodation provided, but nowhere near the scale that's needed. So there's additional work that's been coordinated through Aboriginal health and housing. With mobile camper vans and other facilities, taking advantage of existing facilities in Wilcannia where you've got appropriate water, power and waste services available. There's partner organisations like ADF, like the Flying Doctor Service, like Marimar Health and other local Aboriginal organisations. So there's a range of things there, and it covers everything, Simon, from testing, treatment and isolation options for people that can't do so effectively in their own arrangements. There's rapid and targeted vaccination arrangements. There's identifying support services. I mean, I remember in the first week we had a semi-trailer load of products arrive on the Friday, I think it was. I think there was about 600 food hampers and 300 personal care hampers, and then we had the police and the ADF and local volunteer organisations like the RFS and SES and other community groups literally going door to door to help distribute and limit movement in the town. And it's that sort of focus that continues to go along, and obviously we've got a way to go.
It's amazing when you look at both the efforts of Resilience New South Wales after, first of all, the bushfires, then the floods, now COVID. It seems to be a very broad remit that you have.
It is, Simon. So we have the responsibility for leading preparation for disasters and other events into the future. I think the challenge we've seen in the last 2 to 3 years is we've been in this wave of consecutive and compounding disasters. We've had communities.
That's what I'm wondering. Is it too broad a remit, do you reckon?
Well, no, because it's actually about joining up, and so we don't do all of it ourselves. It's an extraordinary remit across government. It's just joining it all together. So you've had the drought, the bushfires, storms and floods, COVID, more storms and floods, more COVID. So it's been a really challenging time for people. Statutorily, we're responsible for leading recovery efforts, which is again whole of government and non-government organisations coming together to do the very best they can. That recovery is still going on, Simon. Yes, it's been challenged and impacted by things like COVID and consecutive disasters. We know in the floods, just in March of this year, more than 60% of the areas that were declared natural disasters were also council areas that were declared natural disasters from the bushfires. So we've got communities right across the state that are genuinely hurting, that have been impacted and affected terribly over the last few years, and COVID is another challenge to to the repair, to the rebuilding, but most importantly, to the healing. The emotional and psychological well-being of people has been truly tested. So we are joined up and connected with all arms of government. Your obvious ones around emergency response and police and emergency services, fire services, but every arm of government, health obviously with the pandemic, but you've got logistics, you've got transport, you've got regional services, you've got multicultural services. There's a whole range of different services and bodies right across government that are working together in an organised, formal way around appropriate command, control and coordination arrangements that seek to tie everyone together to ensure we get the best response possible for the people of New South Wales.
Commissioner, we'll leave it there, but thanks for joining us, for explaining that, and you'll be pleased to know that, yes, we will be behind the RFS, your old gig, Get Ready Weekend, next weekend across New South Wales.
Love to hear it. Of course you will be, Simon. Thank you very much, and all the very best.
Commissioner of Resilience New South Wales, Shane Fitzsimmons on ABC Radio Sydney.
You're listening to Weekends with Simon Marnie on ABC Radio Sydney.
We will be doing that next weekend from 9:30 till 10 for Sydney, crossing around the area to find out how you can prepare for this summer's bushfire season. And then from 10 o'clock around the state, we're going to revisit the places that I saw in the Road to Recovery tour we did shortly after those bushfires. And so we'll pop back in to places like Bermagui and Nimboida, Tenterfield, to find out how they're going now and how they're preparing for the coming summer.
Welcome to Weekends with Simon Marnie on ABC Radio Sydney. Drive with Richard Glover.
You might have heard over the last few months about some pretty serious fires burning in North America. And as part of the firefighting effort, Aussie RFS were sent over.
We got a call to go and assist one of the crews, and a very angry bear had three crew members backing up against the lake, and they had been fending off the bear using a chainsaw to scare it, and they had literally run out of chainsaw fuel. Thankfully, we got there in time and were able to scare the bear away.
Boy, oh boy, it's like a movie, isn't it?
ABC Radio Sydney.
Politics and culture from a range of Indigenous perspectives. On Speaking Out.
We're seeing a lot of our people, young people, going away. We should be guiding them.
We must have a country to call our own.
A lot of our women were taking their children back into the bush and hiding.
Speaking Out with Larissa Berendt, Sundays at 9 p.m. on ABC Radio.
It is the Weekend Show. Simon Marnie here with you. We were hearing the big picture around New South Wales when it comes to matters of resilience, and Commissioner Shane Fitzsimmons pointing out that the emotional well-being in many communities is being severely tested. And whilst there's a lot of anger and frustration in the far west of New South Wales, the small town of Wilcannia, 11 hours west of Sydney and 8 hours northeast of Adelaide, has been experiencing this full on. In fact, we've been speaking over the last few weeks to one of the community members there, Sarah Donnelly, and she joins us back on the line. Listening to the commissioner there, you really get an understanding of what he says when you look at Wilcannia and the emotional well-being being severely tested, Sarah.
Absolutely, Simon. Thanks for having me this morning. I think that the emotional well-being of community members is certainly something that from the beginning of our volunteer efforts, which has been a part of our local emergency management team, which Commissioner Fitzsimmons talked about there in his message, has been, you know, from my perspective personally, manning the phone and checking in with community members across every sort of day. That's been something that I've heard take a toll, the emotional well-being and their mental health. But certainly one of the things that's been really inspiring for me is the donations and the support, the people that have reached out from all over the country. Certainly that has shown people that there are people caring for them. And that definitely helped.
I want to get into that strength of community nature in just a minute, but if you were in 6 months' time to look back on this occasion, what would be the key points you've learnt?
Look, Simon, I think in all situations, emergency situations, crisis management, there's things that you learn for a specific context that perhaps you don't learn unless you actually go through that, if that makes sense. There was a group of us sitting at our donation shed yesterday and just reflecting with actually some of our early cases and thinking about how we have moved forward and what we have implemented over the last 2 weeks to be able to help people when they're in need that we just didn't have when those first few cases were announced. So I think structurally there's a whole lot of strategic management plans that we've been able to enact that has been in the initial stages a response to what's going on, but hopefully now that those are things that we can preempt and be ready for happening. Hopefully there's things that our context, our community has learnt that other communities that have similar context to us can also take going forward. And I think finally there's issues that have been brought to light as a result of this that are things that have been challenges for our community. There's been a lot of talk about overcrowding and access to health and food that are things that have existed for this community prior to this pandemic. And I think that there's now some plans for changes or things that need to happen to address those that will not only be important for what's happening now, but to help the community in the future.
And that, I guess, is a positive to come out of this, is that you can, not you personally, but we can look at conditions of housing, the role that we play within Indigenous communities, and take from that and learn from it.
I hope so, Simon. I think that sometimes these situations, there's a whole lot of media attention and, you know, people everywhere are talking about Wilcannia at the moment and looking to how they can help. And we're certainly not out of the woods yet. I think this is going to go on for our community for a long time. And so I hope that the attention that's been drawn to it and the things that we're talking about aren't forgotten, that we do continue and that there is change implemented to address some of these things.
Sarah Donnelly, who's a member of the community within Wilcannia and has been working with all the other organisations and the communities for the best, for the goodwill of the town. And that is one of the things that's come to you that probably is a message for the rest of New South Wales, the strength of the community there.
Absolutely. I think the best thing about living in a smaller town, being a Sydney city girl myself, is the way that you through challenge and adversity, groups rise and community members draw together. And having the connections with local organisations and the connections that through this I've certainly made with broader organisations, some of the guidance I personally have received from, as Commissioner Fitzsimmons mentioned, the Resilience New South Wales team and other agencies, our local member Roy Butler reaching out, and those sort of people that lead these kind of management actually talking to people on the grassroots and on the ground and supporting us. And then as a community, our organisations, our local emergency management team, the daily conversations that we're having to support each other and to find solutions to problems as they arise has been quite amazing. But it's been a little more than that for me. It's been community members, family from all over Australia actually have been calling our food support phone to check in on their family members, to make sure that we're checking in on their family members, and also just to check in on us and to see how we're doing. The kindness that we've received from people donating for our efforts, again, all over the country, has been quite extraordinary. I don't think I've stopped talking for the last week and a half, or certainly even 2 weeks. The phone has been running very hot, but it's been such an extraordinary response from people of all walks of life who want to help our community. Last night we had a truck delivered with some fridges from the Tharawal community in, I think it was the Tharawal Land Council. So the boys had driven all the way from Western Sydney, which was quite amazing. So again, that's a connection that when I go back to Sydney, I'll be visiting Land Council and checking in with them. So it's been quite extraordinary. And at the end of each day, the things that I reflect on are the conversations I've had with our community members on the phone, which we mentioned mental health before, may have been some angry conversations, may have been some upset conversations, some confused conversations, but certainly at the end of every conversation it ends with us checking in on each other and people making sure that our volunteers know that their efforts are really appreciated, that people are reaching out wanting me to pass on the message to those who've donated, that their efforts are really appreciated, and a real sense of gratitude from community on the ground.
And it sounds like that conversation needs to continue. For joining us on the Weekend Show again, thank you, Sarah Donnelly.
Thanks so much, Simon.
There is Sarah Donnelly from the town of Wilcannia with an insight into what it's like.